Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open our show with some important national and international news stories. A ceasefire agreement in the Gaza-Hamas war has been reached, and the first hostages have been released today. We'll have details on our show. In Chicago, military-style tactics in ICE raids are drawing criticism and condemnation. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some more national news, including a poll on extending those health care subsidies the Democrats want to halt the shutdown, and an all-in-safe schools movement here in California. Local State Senator Akilah Weber-Pearson's reparations bill has been signed by Governor Gavin Newsom, the first of its kind in the nation, and we'll have details. An effort to recall El Cajon Councilman Phil Ortiz over his stance on immigration issues has fizzled. We'll also have a report on the Rancho Fire in Ramona and how Crest has become a FireWise USA community to help keep the community safe. Hear about a bill signed by the governor to help get caregivers for deported children and why a restraining order sought by Gracia Figueroa against Reina Gonzalez Fletcher, wife of former supervisor Nathan Fletcher, was denied by a judge. Hear why car registrations in California may double soon. Then on Destination East County, we'll have some fun and festive fall and Halloween events coming up in the last half of October. Then we'll take you on the road to the family Christmas tree farm in El Cajon. And if you're wondering why we're featuring this in October, it's because they also have a pumpkin patch, hay maze, and other family-friendly activities. And we'll have a report on some orphaned mountain lion cubs who have been successfully rehabbed by the Ramona Wildlife Center. And finally, on Sounds of History, hear about some fascinating museums in Lemon Grove. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. President Donald Trump announced that Israel and Hamas have agreed to the first phase of his peace deal for Gaza. The Israeli military confirms that a ceasefire in the Palestinian territory took effect on Friday, October 10th, and that it has begun to withdraw from parts of the Gaza Strip, the BBC reports. In the first phase, Hamas has agreed to release all 20 living Israeli hostages, some of whom were released today, Monday, before our show's press deadline, and begin releasing remains of hostages who died, in exchange for Israel releasing about 250 Palestinian prisoners and 1,700 detainees from Gaza. Trump expressed confidence that the ceasefire would hold, telling reporters at the White House that they're all tired of the fighting, Reuters reports. He adds that he believed there was a consensus on the next step of his plan, but acknowledged some details would still need to be worked out. Israelis and Palestinians alike rejoiced after the deal was announced to end 2 years of war, in which over 67,000 Palestinians have been killed, and to return the hostages seized by Hamas in the deadly attack that provoked the war by killing over 1,300 Israeli citizens. As part of the ceasefire deal, hundreds of trucks per day are expected to surge into Gaza carrying food and medical aid, Reuters reports. In a televised address, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israeli forces were staying in Gaza to ensure Hamas was disarmed. He said, if this is achieved the easy way, then that will be good, and if not, then it will be achieved the hard way. A multinational force of about 200 troops overseen by the U.S. military will monitor the ceasefire and assure there are no violations, a senior U.S. official told the BBC. The force is likely to include troops from Egypt, Qatar, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates. A second senior U.S. official says no U.S. forces would be on the ground in Gaza. As part of the ceasefire, the Israeli military says it has begun positioning its troops along the line detailed in the agreement, which, according to the Prime Minister's office, leaves Israel in control of 53% of Gaza. Even as Gazans are heading home, questions loom about whether or not the ceasefire and hostage-prisoner exchange deal between Israel and Hamas will lead to a lasting peace under the 20-point plan to end the war. Hamas issued a statement Friday, October 10th, rejecting what it described as foreign guardianship, adding that governance of Gaza was purely an internal Palestinian matter, according to Reuters. The White House released Trump's 20-point plan to end the war in Gaza, and Netanyahu said he supports the plan following a meeting with Trump at the White House, but it's unclear if Hamas will accept those terms, according to PBS. If completed, the first phase of Trump's 20-point plan would be followed by negotiations over details of the latter phases, but many of these points might be hard to reach agreement on. The proposal states that if it's agreed to by both sides, the war would immediately end. Gaza would be demilitarized and all military terror and offensive infrastructure would be destroyed. Gaza would be governed by a temporary transitional committee of Palestinian technocrats who would be supervised by a board of peace, headed and chaired by Trump. It would also involve former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair. Governance would eventually be handed over to the Palestinian Authority once it's undergone reforms, according to the BBC. The proposal states that Hamas would have no future role in its governance, and that Hamas members would be offered amnesty if they commit to peaceful coexistence or they would be provided safe passage to another country. It also says no Palestinians would be forced to leave Gaza, and those who wish to leave would be free to return. Additionally, a Trump economic development plan to rebuild and energize Gaza would be created by a panel of experts, the BBC reports. Local leaders here in San Diego have shared their reactions to the ceasefire plan. Heidi Gantwerk, president and CEO of the Jewish Federation of San Diego, says seeing those living hostages come home will be huge, adding, "That has been the thing that we are thinking about and praying for every day," NBC7 reports. Samar Ismail, Council of Islamic Relations member here, says that accountability is one of the most important things that we need to see. "We have to ensure that there is no more destruction happening either in the West Bank or in Gaza," he told NBC. Abdullah Tahiri, vice chairman of the Muslim Leadership Council of San Diego, says it's crucial that we have an independent Palestinian state, a sovereign nation with independent rights and the right of self-determination. Rabbi Jason Navarez from San Diego's congregation Beth Israel said upon hearing the news, "Across Israel today, families are waiting with anxious joy, counting the hours until they can hold their loved ones again," San Diego Jewish World reports. The rabbi adds, "And in Gaza, people wake to the same sun, praying that this day will not bring new loss. The sky is wide enough to hold both the relief and the grief, the pain and the hope." National faith-based leaders are also weighing in. Ted Deutsch, CEO of the American Jewish Council, says after 2 agonizing years, the thought that the hostages could be home in the coming days is almost impossible to grasp. "We, along with everyone who has advocated for the hostages' release, are counting down to the moment when we can finally say they are home." Sandra Hagee Parker, Action Fund chairwoman for Christians United for Israel, said that for 2 years we have wept for those who mourn, and we will always do so for those we have lost, according to San Diego Jewish World. She adds, "So too do we rejoice for the 20 families welcoming their loved ones home. As we witness the scenes of elation and anguish, we are reminded that never again is a promise and a responsibility one we will never abandon." Caroline Schwartz, national president of Hadassah, says Hadassah welcomes the announcement that Hamas, the terrorist group which savagely attacked Israel in a murderous rampage and took 251 men, women, and children hostage, has agreed to the first phase of a plan to end the war and free all the remaining hostages who they tortured and starved for an agonizing 2 years. Jamie Crass, president and CEO of Keshet, observes that the road ahead for the hostages' recovery, for the rebuilding of Gaza and the return of children's laughter, for the mourning still ahead for loved ones who are not yet buried, for the repair of so much communal rupture, for the pursuit of an affirming and just world, is a long one, and it will require us to anchor ourselves in hope. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A military-style immigration raid on residents of an apartment building on Chicago's South Side is sparking outrage over increasingly violent and abusive immigration tactics by the Trump administration. Federal agents in military garb smashed through doors with flashbangs, dragged residents into streets in zip ties, including naked children, and left families outside for hours while apartments were trashed. Eyewitnesses say children were zip-tied together, with one agent reportedly laughing and making a profane comment when asked about the children. Eyewitness Daryl Ballard told reporters, quote, "We're under siege. We're being invaded by our own military," unquote. This raid has drawn widespread condemnation from civil rights groups, lawmakers, and the Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, who accused agents of violating due process rights. The raid detained all tenants in the building, CNN reports, even U.S. citizens and immigrants who committed no crimes. Though immigration raids have been happening in Chicago since Trump took office in January, the latest action has attracted national outrage. Civil rights groups, including the National Immigrant Justice Center and the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, of Illinois, have challenged the government's legal basis for the recent raid. The lawsuit alleges that federal agents made dozens of arrests without probable cause or warrants. Attorneys argue that the agents did not properly document probable cause for many of the arrests. While the Department of Homeland Security claimed that the South Shore was tied to the Tren de Aragua gang, reports indicate that only a few of the arrested individuals have suspected gang ties. Additionally, the use of military-style tactics such as raids and flashbangs without clear or sufficient cause raises constitutional questions about unlawful searches and seizures. Lawyers have also emphasized concerns over agents allegedly carrying blank warrants to fill out on the spot. A federal judge is preparing to rule on the legitimacy and damage of this invasion by ICE agents into the homes of citizens, some of whom say their belongings were trashed or stolen. Cindy Hernandez of the Chicago Sun-Times reported on the raid, noting that the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, did not provide any evidence to support its assertions that the neighborhood was known to be frequented by foreign gang members, and furthermore, that some of the people detained during the raid were U.S. citizens. While many Americans have called for stronger immigration enforcement in the past, recent polls show that the tide is turning. The majority of Americans, 51%, now think Trump has gone too far in, quote, arresting and deporting immigrants, unquote. Only 26% say his approach has been, quote, right, unquote. According to the Wall Street Journal poll, public opinion appears to be turning on Trump and Stephen Miller. Miller, the architect of Trump's immigration agenda, who in a tense meeting in May at the ICE headquarters had demanded that officers do, quote, what they needed to do, unquote, to make more arrests, including arresting non-criminals in public places. A July Gallup poll found that fewer Americans support mass deportations compared to the previous year. Specific ICE tactics, like increased workplace raids, also had a majority disapproval in a June Pew Research poll. The growing disapproval comes after increasingly controversial immigration enforcement tactics in major cities across the nation, including Trump deploying National Guard troops and the military on U.S. soil. In August, ICE arrested about 200 people in a Los Angeles area operation, targeting individuals with criminal histories and others subject to deportation. In June, there were reports of multiple immigration sweeps across Los Angeles, with some masked federal agents operating in unmarked cars and street clothes. Lawsuits were filed against the federal government, including by a 79-year-old U.S. citizen who was reportedly pinned to the ground by ICE agents during a raid at his business in Van Nuys in late September. Multiple judges have ruled the deployment of the National Guard into American cities has been unjustified and illegal, though ultimately the Supreme Court will likely have the final say. The public is fighting back. In Chicago, many restaurants have posted signs warning that they will refuse to serve ICE agents. In Los Angeles, Liberty vans are rolling with a chaplain, lawyer, veteran, and camera crew in tow. This is to document raids in real time, de-escalate situations, and protect families, as well as broadcast to the nation what is happening under the president's weaponization of ICE against citizens. The vans were launched by the activist group Save America movement. Support for abolishing the ICE agency entirely has increased since 2024, driven largely by Democrats, as well as some gaining support among independents and a few Republicans. As politicians and the media shifted from criticizing unpopular Trump-era policies in his first term, such as family separations, to expressing concern about the record number of border crossings during the Biden administration, the opinions of average Americans shifted in a similar way. It is no surprise that in recent polling, amid increasingly harsh immigration sweeps, there is now growing support for giving most undocumented immigrants in the United States a pathway to legal status, as well as a rising disapproval of how President Trump is handling deportations. The president's severe immigration tactics may, in fact, be backfiring, leading ICE's popularity to plummet. Even after Congress gave ICE an additional $75 billion for 4 years under Trump's, quote, One Big Beautiful Bill Act, unquote, ICE agents' morale has reportedly fallen due to grueling schedules, increasing pressure to meet quotas, scorn from the public, and overall job dissatisfaction, prompting the agency to offer recruitment incentives such as signing bonuses and student loan repayment to attract new staff amid shortages. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The reporting that somehow there is going to be a Qatari base on United States soil, that's just not true. We are continuing to work with a number of our Arab friends to ensure that we are able to enforce this peace, but we're not going to let a foreign country have an actual base on American soil.
Vice President J.D. Vance says the administration plans to let Qatar build an Idaho base to train pilots, but that the U.S. would retain control of it. The plan has sparked rage in MAGA circles and among some Democrats. Vance cites the Persian Gulf nation's role in ensuring the Gaza ceasefire and says other allies have gotten similar permission. President Donald Trump formally assured Qatar security and forced the Israeli prime minister to publicly apologize after military strikes on Hamas offices in Doha. This spring, Trump accepted a multi-million dollar Qatari luxury jet, despite national security questions. Critics argue he's not putting America first. They also point to a recent bailout of the right-wing president of Argentina, a personal ally, when the country is competing with trade-battered U.S. farmers. A new poll from nonpartisan health group KFF confirms a huge majority of Americans want Congress to extend Affordable Care Act tax credits. The Obamacare insurance subsidies are set to expire at year's end and are a key issue in the shutdown fight. KFF's Ashley Kurzinger says most people don't know they're about to expire, but 3 in 4 support extending them when they find out.
This is something that has bipartisan support. Majorities of Democrats, independents, and Republicans all want to see the federal government extend these subsidies for people who buy their own coverage.
Almost 25 million Americans got coverage through the ACA, a record high for the 4th year in a row. Federal moves to take control and deploy state National Guard troops are drawing sharp objections from blue state governors, but also some in red states as well. Oklahoma's Republican Governor Kevin Stitt calls the deployments, quote, unnecessary, and says they create a troubling precedent. Vermont's Republican Governor Phil Scott refused a White House request to send Vermont Guardsmen to Washington, D.C. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is a prominent Democratic critic and says the administration should not be taking this authority from the states.
We've got to all stand together because there is truly unconstitutional actions that are coming out of this administration, coming at the states and the people of the United States. And all of us, Democrats and Republicans, need to speak out about it.
A new All In for Safe Schools coalition is seeking to help California early childhood educators legally protect staff and families from mass immigration raids. Lisa Davis with the Children's Partnership says they've produced a one-page guide on keeping kids from ending up with child protective services by updating emergency contacts and maintaining security and privacy protocols.
Things like which staff member is authorized to speak with an immigration agent should they show up at their center, how they're storing and releasing private information about parents, children, and staff.
The coalition suggests creating a plan for communicating information to staff and parents when ICE shows up and creating legally protected private spaces within the building. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Governor Gavin Newsom has signed Senate Bill 518, authored by San Diego State Senator Akilah Weber Pearson. It's the first law in the nation to move beyond study to create a commitment toward advancing reparative justice for descendants of slaves and building lasting systems of equity for Black Californians. The measure was co-authored by local Assemblymember LaShay Sharp Collins. Senator Weber Pearson says, "For centuries, the descendants of enslaved people have endured hardship, exclusion, and systemic injustice that denied them access to opportunity and equality. SB 518 is a step toward acknowledging that painful truth and creating the structures needed to repair it. This bill represents hope, responsibility, and a commitment to make right what was wrong for far too long," she adds. The bill passed the state Senate on a 30-10 vote. In the Assembly, it passed 60-17 with 3 members not voting. Supporters included civil rights groups, the Legislative Black Caucus, and reparation advocates. Opponents included those against reparations, as well as some equity groups, which argued the measure did not go far enough. SB 518 establishes the Bureau for Descendants of American Slavery, a permanent state agency responsible for verifying eligibility, safeguarding privacy, educating the public, and coordinating future reparative justice initiatives. This measure transforms the recommendation of the California Reparations Task Force into lasting government infrastructure to guide the state's long-term commitment to justice. After the governor signed her bill, Senator Weber Pearson stated, "Today, California does what no other state has done. We are moving from words to work. SB 518 is not just policy, it is a promise kept. It honors the truth, dignity, and humanity of descendants of enslaved people and begins the process of healing wounds that have gone unaddressed for generations," she concluded. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A grassroots effort to recall El Cajon City Council member Phil Ortiz has fizzled after organizers failed to turn in signatures as required by October 3rd to qualify a recall for the ballot. El Cajon City Clerk Angela Cortez said leadership of the group seeking to remove Ortiz from office, Latinos en Acción, told her that it was not moving forward on the recall, although the Recall Phil Ortiz website was still online as of our show taping deadline. Cortez said that she had no further information regarding the reasons behind the end of the recall attempt, but it is likely that those seeking to get the nearly 2,500 signatures needed from Ortiz's District 4 constituents were unsuccessful in their effort. In May of this year, an initial round of 90 signatures for the internet to circulate a recall petition was validated by the city. Latinos en Acción was also required to publish their intent in a local newspaper and then had 120 days to gather signatures from 20% of the 11,320 registered voters in District 4 in order to put the recall measure on the ballot. One organizer previously told East County Magazine that some people indicated they were afraid to sign the recall petition for fear of retaliation. The recall effort was sparked by Ortiz's vote in February in favor of a resolution that authorized the city's police to cooperate with federal immigration officials in handing over undocumented immigrants who have been convicted or merely accused of a serious crime. The resolution passed by a 3-2 vote, sparking multiple protests and council meetings packed with public speakers on both sides of the contentious issue. Upon launching the recall effort, the Recall Ortiz site stated, "It's clear that Phil Ortiz does not care about the immigrant community that resides in his district, and it's time that we show up and protect our community from those who seek to push an anti-immigrant agenda." Ortiz told East County Magazine that the outcome of the failed recall drive is not surprising. He says, "I was elected to serve my community, and the residents have seen me doing this for the past 7 years. The councilman adds, "Residents of El Cajon, including our wonderful immigrant community, didn't accept these small groups that hold extremist views, and they firmly rejected the idea of a recall. The residents of El Cajon understand that people need to be held accountable for committing crimes against El Cajon residents and families, no matter what their immigration status is." Emails and messages to Latinos en Acción were not answered. Ortiz represents District 4, a district with a majority of Latino voters, as well as other immigrant populations. The measure allowing the city to cooperate more closely with ICE narrowly passed on a 3-2 vote. opponents voice concerns over the Trump administration targeting immigrants, some of whom have not been convicted of crimes, and some have been detained merely for immigration violations. Ortiz was appointed to fill a vacancy on the council and later twice won re-election, the second time unopposed in 2024. Voters won't have an opportunity to weigh in at the ballot box until he next faces re-election in 2028, unless a new recall effort is mounted. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
A fast-moving brush fire forced evacuations and threatened homes in Ramona on Thursday, October 9th. An overturned vehicle ignited dry brush near Highway 78 and Kastner Road, sparking the Rancho Fire, not far from where the deadly 2007 Witch Creek Fire began. The fire prompted evacuation orders to 59 households and evacuation warnings for another 159. A temporary evacuation center was set up at the Ramona Rodeo Grounds. Air tankers, helicopters, and ground crews battled the blaze, which burned 105 acres and forced shutdown of Highway 78 before firefighters were able to contain the fire and halt its forward spread. The rapid response shows how far firefighting responses have come since 2007, with regional coordination and multiple agencies battling the blaze. It also serves as a reminder of the importance of clearing defensible space around your home, packing a go bag, and being prepared to evacuate if a wildfire occurs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Heidi Hope.
Every year, devastating wildfires sweep across the United States, threatening homes, landscapes, and lives. But there are steps that you and your neighbors can take to reduce this risk. Communities such as Crest are stepping up to become a FireWise USA community. The FireWise USA program, led by the National Fire Protection Association, offers communities practical, science-based steps to prepare for wildfire, making homes and neighborhoods safe. Supported by CAL FIRE's Community Wildfire Preparedness and Mitigation Division, the program encourages residents, local fire departments, and organizations to work together to improve defensible space and reduce fire hazards. Simple actions, such as clearing dry leaves, pine needles, and downed branches, can make a big difference in reducing the spread of wildfire. Community-driven programs such as brush clearing, curbside chipping, and helping neighbors with yard work further strengthen protection for the entire neighborhood. Crest's FireWise journey began last year when two residents volunteered to lead the community's initial FireWise recognition effort. 31 homes in Northeast Crest participated in a pilot program that earned official FireWise USA designation in December 2024. Building on that success, Crest expanded its efforts community-wide, and in October 2025, the entire Crest area achieved FireWise USA recognition. This achievement reflects the dedication and teamwork of Crest residents who continue to make wildfire safety a shared priority. By staying engaged and taking preventive measures, Crest is helping ensure a safer, more resilient future for all. Benefits of joining a FireWise community include potential discounts on fire insurance, access to possible grant funding to help with yard cleanup and weed abatement, reduced risk to life and property from wildfire, and strengthened community connections through shared resources and neighbors' support. The FireWise USA program is free and built on grassroots collaboration, neighbors working together to reduce the risk of wildfire damage in their community. The FireWise program does not involve home inspections, pass-fail evaluations, or citations. Its purpose is only to educate, support, and organize communities around practical steps to reduce wildfire risks. You can learn more about the FireWise USA program at the National Fire Protection Association website at nfpa.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
KNSJ is proud to host Tom Hartman, the number one progressive talk show host in America, on October 17th at the Columbus Club, 4425 Home Avenue, San Diego. Hartman, an award-winning author of 20 books, will engage the audience in a lively conversation about his new book and more. The book is The Last American President, A Broken Man, A Corrupt Party, and A World on the Brink. The event is a fundraiser for your progressive radio station, KNSJ-FM, on which The Tom Hartman Show airs weekdays from 9 to noon. For tickets, see knsj.org or call 619-283-1100. knsj.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a bill allowing a broad range of relatives to step in as children's caregivers if their parents are deported, a measure that has provoked a firestorm of conservative criticism, CalMatters reports. Assembly Bill 495 will also bar daycare providers from collecting immigration information about a child or their parents, and it will allow parents to nominate a temporary legal guardian for their child in family court. Newsom says in a press release, "We are putting on record that we stand by our families and their right to keep their private information safe, maintain parental rights, and help families prepare in case of emergencies." It was one of several measures the Democratic-dominated legislature pushed this year in response to the Trump administration's aggressive deportation crackdown in Los Angeles and across California. Newsom, a Democrat, signed several of those other bills, banning Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents from wearing masks in the state and requiring schools and hospitals to require warrants when officers show up. The most controversial aspect of the bill concerns an obscure, decades-old form called a caregiver's authorization affidavit. Relatives of a child whose parents are temporarily unavailable and with whom the child is living can attest to being the child's caregiver. The designation allows the adult to enroll the child in school, take them to the doctor, and consent to medical and dental care. The new law will broaden who is allowed to sign that caregiver affidavit, from more traditional definitions of relatives to any adult in the family who is related to the child by blood, adoption, or affinity within the fifth degree of kinship, which includes people like great aunts or cousins. Parents can cancel the caregiver designation, which is intended to be a temporary arrangement and does not give that person custody. Supporters said parents at risk of deportation should get to choose someone trusted to care for their children if ICE detains them. Expanding who is eligible for the caregiver form, they said, gives immigrant parents more options because they may not have close relatives in the country, but benefit from strong ties with extended family or informal community networks. The legislation was backed by immigrants' rights groups and children's advocates, such as the Alliance for Children's Rights and First Five California. The bill's author, Assemblymember Celeste Rodriguez, a Democrat, said at a recent press conference, "I introduced this bill so children do not have to wonder what will happen to them if their parents are not able to pick them up from school." But Republicans, the religious right, and parental rights activists argued that the bill would instead endanger children. They claimed it would allow strangers to sign the affidavit and claim the child into their care. Hundreds of opponents showed up at the Capitol by busload to rally against the legislation organized by Pastor Jack Hibbs of the Calvary Chapel Chino Hills Megachurch, who called it the most dangerous bill we've ever seen in Sacramento. Some of the blowback stemmed from false claims that the bill would allow strangers to get custody of children to whom they're not related. Assemblyman Carl DeMaio, a San Diego Republican, called the legislation a human trafficker's dream, though there's no factual basis for that claim. In an email, Greg Burton, vice president of the California Family Council, took issue with the fact that parents might not be there when the affidavit form is signed. "Where are parental rights?" he wrote. "These rights are nothing if someone else can claim them by simply signing a form." Over the summer, Rodriguez narrowed the legislation to exclude non-relative extended family members, but it was not enough to quell the controversy. The legislation passed along party lines. Governor Newsom, announcing his decision, quietly acknowledged the controversy in a press release. He included statements he said were correcting the record on mischaracterizations and said the new law does not change the fact that parental rights and legal guardianships must be decided by family court judges. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Superior Court Judge Blair Soper has denied a civil harassment restraining order sought by Gracia Figueroa against Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, the wife of former supervisor Nathan Fletcher. This marks the second time Figueroa's request has been rejected, following the initial denial of a temporary restraining order on September 15th upon the judge finding insufficient evidence of violence or threats. Previously, a judge also dismissed Figueroa's sexual harassment lawsuits against Fletcher and MTS, finding Figueroa had substantial credibility issues, including deleting evidence. Gonzalez Fletcher called the restraining order request another attempt by Ms. Figueroa to inflict harm upon me and my family by wielding egregiously false allegations in court filings designed to drive press attention to herself. Livia Bodine, attorney for Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, added, "This was an egregious misuse of the court's time by Ms. Figueroa. I would caution her against attempting to silence my client with more lies, or she may expose herself to further legal action." During a hearing on her restraining order request, Figueroa told a judge that someone showed up at her home wielding a wrench and that on another occasion someone slashed her car's tires. Under questioning by the judge, she acknowledged that she didn't know whether Gonzalez Fletcher was involved in those incidents, but feared her public statements may have influenced other people to take matters into their own hands. Gonzalez Fletcher, in a press release, refutes wrongdoing. She states, "All of the conduct Ms. Figueroa complained about was constitutionally protected speech that serves a legitimate purpose. The truth, while uncomfortable for Ms. Figueroa, is not grounds for seeking a restraining order." Figueroa, in a statement sent to East County Magazine, says it's important to speak up even after the ruling because this now puts Lorena Gonzalez's behavior on the record, making it easier for the next person to prove a pattern of harassment. Figueroa told the judge that Gonzalez Fletcher said she would not contact Figueroa again, adding, "I hope she can focus on herself and her family from now on." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A coalition of California consumer and small business groups is asking Governor Gavin Newsom to veto a bill that would allow car dealers to more than triple the fee to process registration and title for a vehicle. Right now, fees are capped at $85 for many dealers. Senate Bill 791 would allow dealers to charge 1% of the purchase price or a maximum of $260. Richard Holliber with the Consumer Federation of California says dealers often spring these fees on the buyer at the very end of a sale.
It shouldn't be a gotcha fee that is suddenly presented at the last minute. The consumer is usually very excited about buying the car and is just going to shrug and say, "All right, whatever." It is unfair.
The bill's author, State Senator Dave Cortese, said in a statement that dealers need to recover their costs, noting that California's new fee would still be lower than the national average. An earlier version of the bill would have capped the fee at $500, so $260 represents a compromise in the eyes of lawmakers. In other states with no cap on fees, some dealers charge $1,000 or more. Attorney Gregory Babbitt with the Auto Fraud Legal Center in San Diego says the document fee should be related to the actual costs to process the paperwork. Costs, he says, have gone down, not up.
In this day and age, most car dealers submit everything electronically to the DMV. I don't think that there's a need to increase the doc fee because it's just a way of charging consumers more.
Supporters of the bill include major car dealers like Tesla, AutoNation, and CarMax. Governor Newsom has until October 13th to sign the bill, veto it, or let it become law without a signature. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is John Tidwell with Destination East County. October brings an array of spooky events such as a haunted circus, haunted trails in county parks, a Day of the Dead celebration, Haunt Fest on Main and El Cajon, a haunted harvest in Julian, pumpkin patches, costume contests for people and dogs, a boo bash at Viejas, a haunted train ride in Campo, a pumpkin bash, and spooky sleepover at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, and an autumn festival at the San Diego Zoo's Safari Park. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association hosts its annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration each weekend in October. You can ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County backcountry as fall descends upon Campo along the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway route. After the ride, guests can decorate pumpkins from an outdoor patch and view displays of haunted train cars and Halloween scenes. Passengers are encouraged to come in costume for the family-friendly event, which has several departures each weekend. There's also an adults-only Sip and Scare Sunset Special on Saturday nights in October. For tickets and details, visit Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org/pumpkin/. Borrego Springs hosts its annual Borrego Days Desert Festival on October 18th and 19th. Saturday features a morning flyover and a parade, as well as the Shine and Show Vehicle Show. There's also a beer garden, kids zone, food stations, and booths featuring everything from art to information. Plus, you can enjoy live music all weekend long. For a full schedule of events and details, visit borregodays.com/. The Magnolia in El Cajon hosts its third annual Haunted Circus on October 17th at 5:30 p.m. This year's theme is Monsters at Play. Family-friendly shows feature jugglers, contortionists, stilt walkers, hoop throwers, stacking chairs, crystal balls, acrobats, and more, with performances by Twisted Orbit Circus Entertainment. For tickets and details, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. The City of El Cajon invites you to HauntFest on Main, set for October 17th from 4 to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. This family-friendly event, open to the community, features live music, costume contests, carnival rides, a haunted car show, and a variety of local vendors offering food, crafts, games, and more. For the haunting details, visit elcajon.gov and click on the calendar. Oma's Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside is open Tuesdays through Sundays in October. In addition to picking pumpkins, visitors can enjoy a haze maze, a petting zoo for all ages, a hayride, duck races, and more. Children delight in interactive games and activities, while adults can sample delicious pumpkin-themed treats and fall-flavored products. Learn more and book your reservations online at omasfamilyfarm.com. Famed for its pumpkin patch, including giant pumpkins, Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center also hosts several October events, including a pumpkin festival, craft fair October 4th, costume contest and parade October 25th, and Halloween doggy costume contest and parade October 26th. Find a full list of Bates Nut Farm events at batesnutfarm.biz. Lions, Tigers, and Bears Sanctuary in Alpine is hosting a spooky campover on October 24th under the stars. The fun includes campfire songs, pumpkin carving, a Halloween costume contest, and an all-ages haunted house. Enjoy the animal trivia challenge, make s'mores by the campfire, and sip hot cocoa at their Big Cat and Wildlife Sanctuary in San Diego. Come dressed in your best costume and watch rescued big cats and bears devour their pumpkin treats during the Pumpkin Bash at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine on October 25th at 10 a.m. Pumpkins are stuffed with delicious goodies for fall-themed enrichment as the animals play with their pumpkins and gobble down the goodies. For tickets at these events, visit www.lionstigersandbears.org. The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in San Pasqual hosts its Autumn Festival each Saturday and Sunday in October. Enjoy viewing wildlife, watching special entertainment, and tasting culinary comforts for plenty of family fun. In honor of Founders Day, there's no admission fee during the entire month of October for children age 11 and under when accompanied by an adult at both the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park, a perfect time for kids to go wild. Learn more at sdzsafaripark.org. San Diego Parks and Recreation offers a variety of spooky happenings in October. These include Dia de los Muertos at Rancho Guajome, Adobe and Haunted Trail Hikes at Oak Oasis in Lakeside, both on October 11th, Haunted Trail at Dos Picos County Park, and a Halloween Festival at the Lakeside Community Center, both on October 17th. There are also spooky trails at Hellhole Canyon Preserve on October 18th and a spooktacular Spring Valley Community Center on October 24th. For a full list of activities in county parks, see sdparks.org. The park at Viejas in Alpine hosts a Boo Bash Halloween party on October 31st, featuring music, dancing, and devilishly good fun. Enjoy music from two DJs, plus Earth to Mars, a Bruno Mars tribute band, a costume contest with $7,500 in prizes, themed photo booth, Halloween cocktails, caricature artists, and Halloween treats. For full details, visit viejas.com and click on Events. Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures, near Julian, hosts Haunted Harvest Nights each Saturday in October, featuring spooky fun, if you dare. Activities include a haunted hayride and a walk through a ghostly forest, ghost stories, and more. For tickets and details, visit fortcross.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Miriam Raftery taking you on the road in East County. Don't let the name fool you. Family Christmas Tree Farm in El Cajon is geared up for Halloween, too. As autumn settles in over San Diego County, Family Christmas Tree Farm has rolled out its pumpkins and fall flavors even as it prepares for the winter holidays. They were named the fourth best Christmas tree farm in the nation by Yelp. The 10-acre Christmas tree farm on Pepper Drive has been serving the community since 1972, when it started its dedication to cultivating the Christmas spirit in East County. For 50 years, the Stokes family has nurtured the land, the trees, and the local tradition that draws families year after year. It is one of San Diego's go-to sources for real Christmas trees, wreaths, greenery, and holiday decorations, and while small in acreage, its impact on local traditions runs deep. Throughout October, it is dedicated to fall festivities. Its pumpkin patch invites visitors to navigate rows of vibrant gourds to find the perfect jack-o'-lantern canvas. Its most popular draw, however, is its giant hay maze, an elaborate challenge that draws competitive spirits from kids of all ages and those who are young at heart. The site also offers tractor rides, cornhole, farm animals to get close to, and fall-themed goodies like fresh julienne apple cider, slushies, and pies, as well as items such as scented candles, cinnamon brooms, and more. It is the farm's focus on interactive hands-on fun that makes it a draw, with a minimal admission charge granting access to an afternoon of outdoor activity. Find more information at familychristmastreefarm.com.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This month, the All In for Safe Schools Coalition is releasing resources for early childhood educators, including preschools and daycare centers, on how to follow the law and create safe spaces for families during this time of increased immigration enforcement. The one-pager advises providers to update their emergency contacts so the children don't end up with Child Protective Services. Lisa Davis with the Children's Partnership says it's also a good idea to update security and privacy protocols.
Things like which staff member is authorized to speak with an immigration agent should they show up at their center, how they're storing and releasing private information about parents, children, and staff.
The coalition also advises providers to create a plan for communicating urgent information to staff and parents when an ICE action takes place. Facilities can also establish private spaces within the building that are not open to the public, triggering Fourth Amendment protections, which require a judicial warrant for law enforcement to enter. Davis says the coalition is working on a second set of guidelines for K-12 schools on how to create a welcoming atmosphere for LGBTQ+ and immigrant students.
Some of it is gender-affirming, like using pronouns and bathrooms, but then special accommodations, data privacy, so that they're not outed to family members and or other support people without their consent.
Providers can get more information at allinforsafeschools.org. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A goat trapped between boulders on Mizpah Lane in Descanso has been freed thanks to the efforts of CAL FIRE and San Diego fire crews. Firefighters from Station 44 in Pine Valley and Station 45 in Descanso responded, performing a technical rescue to extricate the goat. CAL FIRE posted on Facebook, "We are deeply honored to serve our communities and grateful for the trust placed in us to help when it's needed most." Then quipped, "When a goat finds itself between a rock and a hard place, our firefighters don't kid around." The grateful goat owner has since filled in the crack between the boulders to prevent the frisky goat from falling in again. From the goat's perspective, no doubt, the rescue was the greatest of all time, otherwise known as GOAT, or GOAT. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show, and now it's time for the Sounds of History.
This is Jonathan Goetz bringing you the Sounds of History. The Lemon Grove Historical Society invites you to take a stroll around town to visit five of Lemon Grove's beloved historic structures. The Parsonage Museum on Olive Street is open Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Built in 1897 as the First Congregational Church of Lemon Grove, this Redwood Folk Victorian was created by volunteer ranchers under the guidance of Reverend Isaac Atherton for $912. A second structure was later added in 1911 when it became a parsonage to house the pastor, when the structure was moved to its present location to make way for a larger church. The steeple was removed about 1915. In 1994, the city bought the property and the Historical Society, led by Helen Ofield, restored the decaying church. It became the Parsonage Museum, winning the Governor's Historic Preservation Award in 2001. A second historic site is the Big Lemon at Main and Broadway. This beloved monument of civic folk art is made of plaster, timber, and chicken wire. The giant lemon was built by volunteer ranchers and made its first appearance as a parade float on July 4, 1928 in San Diego, carrying the first Miss Lemon Grove and her six princesses. The Big Lemon served as an annual float until 1932, when it was placed on Main Street, where it has become an iconic symbol of Lemon Grove. Another historic site is the Grove Pastry Shop. Built by Dr. Charles Good, a local citrus grower and dentist, this Mission Revival building stands at Main and Pacific, the site of the town's original general store that burned down in 1906. A temporary store was built, and the structure has since been used as a market, an auto parts store, and a waterbed store before Grove Pastry Shop opened there in 1980, operating until 2016. On the side of the Grove Pastry Shop building, you can see the Lemon Grove History Mural, a must-see attraction depicting Lemon Grove from its first Native American residents through pioneer times to the present day. St. Philip the Apostle Church, a Gothic-style structure built in 1887, may be the most traveled church in the country. It was built in downtown San Diego, later moved near San Diego State University, and relocated again in 1970 to its present location on Hardy Drive in Lemon Grove. Parishioners fully restored it after a devastating fire in 1972. It is the oldest continuously operated Episcopal church in San Diego County. A far different architectural style, Spanish Mission Revival, can be seen at St. John of the Cross Church on Broadway. Built in 1959, this church celebrated its Diamond Jubilee in 2015. The Knights of Columbus Hall, built in 1940, was the original St. John of the Cross Church and is still used today as a church hall. You can learn more and see historical photographs of these fascinating sites at the Lemon Grove Historical Society's website at lghistorical.org.
Two mountain lion cubs, who arrived at San Diego Humane Society's Ramona Wildlife Center as orphans in March, have been returned to the wild. The young carnivores were released into suitable habitat in San Diego County on September 18th after undergoing more than 5 months of rehabilitation designed to limit human interaction and prepare them for life on their own. The cubs were originally found alone and malnourished before being safely trapped by the UC Davis California Carnivores Program team in coordination with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. They were transferred to San Diego Humane Society's Ramona Wildlife Center here in East County on March 26th. While in care, the cubs were provided with Project Wildlife's expert veterinary attention and a specialized rehabilitation protocol to build essential survival skills, including hunting behaviors and a natural awareness of people. Autumn Welch, Wildlife Operations Manager of the San Diego Humane Society, says, "We're incredibly proud of the work our team and partners have done to give these cubs a second chance. Releasing them back into their native habitat is the ultimate goal and a major success story for mountain lion conservation in California." San Diego Humane Society's Project Wildlife program cares for more than 10,000 wild animals every year, from baby songbirds to large carnivores. The organization's mission is to rehabilitate and return wild animals to their natural habitats whenever possible, while promoting coexistence through education. For more information about Project Wildlife or to support their work, you can visit sdhumane.org/wildlife. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
KNSJ is proud to host Tom Hartman, the number one progressive talk show host in America, on October 17th at the Columbus Club, 4425 Home Avenue, San Diego. Hartman, an award-winning author of 20 books, will engage the audience in a lively conversation about his new book and more. The book is The Last American President, A Broken Man, A Corrupt Party, and A World on the Brink. The event is a fundraiser for your progressive radio station, KNSJ-FM, on which The Tom Hartman Show airs weekdays from 9 to noon. For tickets, see knsj.org or call 619-283-1100. knsj.org.